Ja.
In speaking of the supramental instruments, we must know that the faculties that we are using at present, they are, in their essence, projections of the faculties of the supermind. It is not as if the faculties that we are using are going to be rejected and new faculties are going to come in that place. Actually, in their source, all the faculties that we use in life are connected with the supramental consciousness. There may be something else in their functionings, in their origin. But as they are functioning here on earth, they are to be taken as long projections of the supramental faculties. And that is why it is possible for the supermind, when it starts getting organized in the human consciousness, in the human being, to take up these lower faculties, change their character and impart its own character, its own nature, and make them function as direct instruments of the supermind. Now these faculties and powers are not merely those with which we are familiar as functionings of the mind. We have other faculties, the subliminal ones, the subtler ones, which are not normally active in our life. But still, they are also faculties which are to come into operation with the progressive expansion of our being. And the supermind takes up even these less known, but nevertheless true powers and faculties of the subtle being, of the subliminal. In the first place, the action of the supermind starts on the highest level of our mind, and that is the plane of ideative knowledge, where the mind pursues knowledge, where the mind organizes its ideas and studies things from various approaches, from various points of view, in order to come to a definite understanding of the principles of things. And in this ideative action, the normal thought activity, the mind has a triple motion. First, from our end, is what may be called the habitual thought mind. We are used to think in certain grooves, not only because of our own habits, but of the environmental habits, of the habits of collective mind. Certain ideas, certain thoughts, certain forms of thinking, coming to conclusions, we take them for granted, and the mind habitually flows into those modes. And these activities are more or less mechanical, habitual. We give the same responses, to same or similar data. One thought leads automatically to another thought. We don't reason, it has become a habit. So there is this action of the habitual mind, what Sri Aurobindo calls the physical mind, mechanical mind. It goes on and on. It is such a hindrance when you start attending to the mind and want to correct its action, open it to the higher workings, that it is this habitual and mechanical mind which presents the most obstinate difficulties. You get a doubt, you reason it out, reject the doubt. And when you think you have rejected the doubt comes once again. Again you go through the whole process, third time, fourth time, and so on. There is, without meaning it, there is a mechanical movement. Unless you make up your mind, exert your will and say, I will have none of it, the turnings of the mechanical mind cannot be stopped. Like a clock it goes on, whatever you may be doing, that mechanical activity of the mind goes on. This, we can say, is the lowest level of the working of the thought mind. The second level above that is what we may call the pragmatic idea mind. That is, we get ideas. We immediately assess them, decide whether they are right or wrong, whether they are to be entertained or rejected, not from the point of the knowledge contained in them, from the truth contained in them, but from the standard, whether they are useful to life, whether they can be translated into action, how far they will help to better my life. And we relate things to their ideas, to their utility, not to their own intrinsic value, but we decide their importance, their role, depending upon how far they can be harnessed for purposes of life. This is called the pragmatic idea mind. Above that is the pure ideative mind, where ideas are received, weighed, organized, and tabulated to build up certain knowledge. At that time we are not concerned whether they are practical, whether they have a background, whether somebody else has tried them. But we weigh those thoughts, those ideas, purely from the point of view how far they can be organized, how far they serve the knowledge pattern which we have before us. So the habitual mind, the pragmatic idea mind, and the pure ideative mind. These are the normal three movements of the thought mind. And as it happens, all of these don't work in harmony. At times the habitual mind pulls one strongly, at times the pragmatic idea mind tries to steal a march over the ideative mind. At times the pragmatic and the habitual mind defeat the ideative mind, and so on. So there is, even within the thought mind, there is a lack of harmony, a conflict between its three movements. When the supermind comes into action, when it starts reforming the mind, taking over the functions of the mind and changing them, the first result that we see is there is a coordinated movement. between these three elements and movements of the mind, there is a harmony introduced. Each one helps and buttresses the other, urged by the supermind. And no obstructions are allowed to stand in the coordination of the three minds. Each layer of the mind, thought mind, has its value, has its function. Out of place, they become anachronisms. So the knowledge or the light of the supermind helps us to decide precisely which part of the mind has to be operative at what stage and for what purpose. The supermind is able to do that because it is in possession of the essential truth of things. It proceeds from that basis. It does not have to build up knowledge entirely from the data gathered for it and presented to it by the external senses or even by the subtle senses. The supermind does not lose itself in the multiplicity of data and experiences like the mind. It is always in possession of the self that constitutes the essence of things. It is the expression of that self. It is the varied manifestation of that truth, the truth which is in its possession. That is what it studies, that is what it organizes, and because it is in full possession of the basic knowledge of the truth, it is easier for the supermind to get at the truth of the varied forms that are, so to say, the self-placing of the truth of the self. The pragmatic mind, for instance, is not abolished, only it is not allowed to decide the value of an idea, the value of a thought. The pragmatic mind is made an instrument. The knowledge is there, but through the pragmatic mind, the knowledge is linked to the life. So the pragmatic mind functions as a link between life, the field of life, and the truth in the supermind, which is to be manifested or organized in life. The pragmatic mind does not bind the supramental consciousness. And even the habitual and mechanical movement is used in its transformed action as something that orders the thought. Thoughts are just running, but this habitual mind, that faculty, is used to streamline these thought activities, to build up a kind of an underlying order. He says, an order of thought, a cycle of will, and stability in motion. These are the three things which are built up on the basis of the habitual and mechanical movement of the ordinary human mind. Each activity of the human mind is rendered into its higher, diviner term, and the habitual and mechanical movement is rendered in terms of order of thought, cycle of will, which the will is to be exerted in what direction? Repeatedly it is to be exerted in a similar juncture, and stability in motion. Otherwise everything is in a flux. Only the difference is the mind, even the thought mind, draws its support from outside, from below it. The senses bring the data. The human reason or the logic organizes that those data. So they draw from below, but in the supermind draws from above. The foundation of things is above. The truth of things is above. And the supermind, instead of drawing from below like the ordinary unenlightened human mind, it draws from above. And whatever difficulty there is in doing so is only due to the habits of the mind, which still form a sort of an undercurrent to the whole operation. Till the mind is completely changed, till the mind is completely transformed, the mind's characteristic action at the lower plane, they dilute the functioning of the supermind and they lessen its effectivity. Then there is the reason. Reason plays such an important part in the normal functioning of the human mind. Of course, reason is not alone. Reason is there. We know normally what are the functions of reason. But looming over the reason, enveloping the reason, whether we are aware of it or not, there is the intuition. The intuition, that is the link between the supermind and the mind, that is always there. Whenever it gets an opportunity, that intuition percolates and gives us glimpses of truth. Even when we are reasoning, theorizing and all that, certain flashes come, because intuition is always pressing from above. Pressing from below also is what we may call the life mind, the desires, the motives, the impulses of the life mind, of the vital mind, or the what they call normally the situations of life. They tend to pull the reason in that direction. Whether we are fully aware of it or not, the slant of our reason is due to this pull of the life mind from below. So the reason does not ultimately function on its own. Always it is a triple action. From above, the intuition presses upon it. From below, the life mind, the movements of the life mind press from below in order to get the reason to support their claim. In the action of the supermind, replacing the mental functionings, all these three undergo a change. Reason continues, but it does not confine itself to the data supplied by the senses. The working of intuition is not sporadic. It is more regular, more organized, and constantly it corrects the tendency of logical reason to limit things, to fragment things. Similarly, the discrimination, the supramental light, the rays falling on the human mind, the discrimination, intuitive discrimination, that prevents the mixture of impulses of the life mind from diluting and vitiating the action of the reason. The reason is allowed to continue its role as the link between intuition above and the sense mind below. When reason is exposed to the continuing action of the supermind, its field enlarges. Note that reason is not displaced. Reason is taken up, enlarged, uplifted, stretched out, till it ceases to be the reason that we know. But behind the human reason, there is what is called the supramental reason. And reason persists because of this supramental reason at its back. And reason in the process of transformation is not only active in the outer field, but in the inner. Even at our level, our reason looks at objective things, what we call the objective field. It is aware of truth within ourselves, the inner field. From its own angle, it judges them, assesses them. Then it tries to understand what happens to other beings, not outer nature merely, other beings, through their gestures, through their words, through so many indirect channels. It tries to get knowledge of what is going on in others. And then there are planes of existence which are beyond and behind the physical. They we may call the occult. That also, reason tries to take those phenomena, analyze them, study them, and come to its own conclusions. And then there is the self of things. Here also, reason tries to understand the principles of things. And principles not only of nature, principles of living beings, principles of creation. All these, the reason is active in so many fields. The same process continues, the same fields continue, though in an enlarged way, when the supermind takes over the functions of the mental reason. The same data are taken, the data are enlarged upon, the arrangements are larger, the judgments are more sure. The necessity for full and precise action is felt more and more when the range is extended, when more faculties come into operation, and the supramental reason can deal with it more securely because it is in possession of the fundamental unity of things. Our reason, human reason, has to arrive at unity in a conceptual manner. But the supramental reason is naturally in possession of the fundamental unity, and everything else, the variations, are seen and studied by it in the context, with the background of this fundamental unity. Then after reason, there comes memory. In the functioning of the mind, we are all aware of the role that memory plays. Things that have been stored up in our consciousness. There is a particular faculty called memory, through which we recall, at any rate we attempt to recall what has passed. And this individual memory, helped by what is called the race memory, not the recorded memory in form of books and things, but there is an instinctual race memory where things come naturally to us. Each race has its own memories. The Western rishis have their particular memories, Eastern rishis have their memories. And these different kinds of memory, individual memory, the environmental memory, and the race memory, all those add to our fund of knowledge, add to our means of knowledge. These are deepened, and much more is tapped through these memories by the supramental action than the mental action does. Then there is the question of judgment. The human reason, the human mind, assembles the data, compares things, compares what has happened with what has happened in the past, elsewhere, and then comes to a certain judgment which may or may not be correct. Now, proceeding from a base of truth, the judgment of and guided by intuitive discrimination, the supramental reason naturally comes to a correct judgment of things, but never a wrong judgment. One judgment may have to be revised in terms of a larger judgment, but there is never a wrong judgment. And imagination, which plays such a wasting part, wasting role in our life, mental, human mental life, though there have been cases where imagination has been helpful, but by and large, imagination leads to daydreaming. But in the supramental consciousness, when the super mind starts functioning, imagination becomes a power. What it is normally, it is what it originally is. That is, it assembles in the consciousness the various possibilities that are still waiting to be actualized. We don't think of possibilities. When we speak of imagination, human imagination, it is our desires, it is our wishes that take shape, mental shapes. But in the supramental reason, imagination becomes a power of evoking number of possibilities that are behind the actualities of the present. And in the very act of projecting these potentialities, dwelling upon them, they give them a power to actualize themselves. So imagination is made a link between what is manifest and what is still not manifest. Whether all of it is to be manifested or not, that is to be decided by the supramental will. But before the will can come into operation, the will needs to have before it what are the possibilities still lying untapped. And the imagination plays that helpful role in the supramental reason. The mind can give us only knowledge of phenomena. The reality is not grasped. But when the supramental reason starts, first comes the reality, and then comes the phenomena. First comes the unity, then the multiplicity. So everything proceeds from the base of oneness, unity, reality. Everything else as a consequence. So the whole process is reversed in the supramental reason. Our reason comes into operation after the senses contact. What does the supramental reason do? The supramental reason also utilizes the contact, but it is not bound by the contact. The supramental reason may make a sense, physical sense contact or a subtle sense contact, a starting point, but it doesn't build its knowledge upon that. It may use it as an occasion for a direct contact of the consciousness with the object of knowledge. You see a thing, that sight itself may be enough to form a bridge, to form a link between the supramental reason and the object of knowledge. But it is not bound. Even without that sense contact, if there is a desire and there is a wish or a will in me to know a thing, the consciousness goes and contacts it directly. That object, it may be a human being, it may be anything, wants to yield its contents to me. Immediately my consciousness responds and takes cognizance of it. There is no indispensableness of the sense contact. There can be a subtle sense contact. There can be a thought contact. You may think of me or I may think of you, and a contact may be established. But these kind of contacts, subtle or gross, they are not indispensable. Then the supramental reason acts even when it takes cognizance of an objective field. It does what Sri Aurobindo calls, it is subjectively objective. That is, it envelops that object with its own consciousness. Just as I have a certain intimacy when I think of what is happening in me. I am getting angry, I am getting happy, I have a warm feeling, whatever, or there is a certain movement in my stomach. Well, I know it intimately. I don't need any other logical support or proof. I know it. Similarly, with the same intimacy, the supramental reason, when it takes knowledge of an objective reality, an objective field, it does it with the same facility, directness, intimacy, as we do today only of our subjective selves. So what he calls, it is subjectively objective. Again, it is universal. The supramental reason, the supramental consciousness is cosmic or universal in its range. So it is easy. There is nothing really other or outside to it. It is at one level, it is one with the universal consciousness. So when it wants to know a thing, there is a spontaneous envelopment of that object. And I know things as I know things today of what is happening within myself. There is a natural and a spontaneous oneness with the known. It is not other. The knower is not here and the known is not there with the knowledge linking. The knower becomes one with the known. So the knowledge is self-evident. There is a knowledge by identity. If in the supramental reason we speak of observation, observation becomes a movement to bring out a latent knowledge. Knowledge of all things is there latent. An observation, a contact, a hearing, all those become occasions for the canalization of consciousness, the supramental reason in this case, to bring out knowledge relevant to it. Otherwise there is an all knowledge and a self knowledge. But a particular thing, when you want to know, you observe it. And that observation becomes an occasion for the flow in a particular direction to bring out the knowledge that is within me regarding that thing. And this observation becomes a bridge of connection between here and there. What we discuss as samyama, concentration on a thing, to know the contents of a thing in the yoga of Patanjali, the famous samyama, is not necessary because it is spontaneous. We do not need to concentrate. It is enough to direct our gaze. It is enough to have a thought of a thing in order to be filled with the knowledge of that thing. No special concentration is necessary for the supramental reason. To get the knowledge or to know the reality of a thing. I think you can stop there. I think there's still a number of points are there. We shall take it up next time. Those who have not taken the service letter, they may just don't kindly keep it on the table. Any questions? Come.
Is
not enough by detachment. By detaching ourselves from that part of the mind, by ignoring, by refusing to participate in the movements of the thought mind, habitual mind, it is possible. Normally we are caught up in that group. We have to detach ourselves, stand above it, and refuse to participate. At our level, that's the only discipline that can be done.